Well, it's 5 o'clock here on the West Coast, time for the one show you can't miss each and every week. The only show that takes you out into the wilderness, explores new paths, new directions, and new techniques in the strange new world of sales in the 21st century. So here he is, your own personal guide through this wilderness, the official pilgrim on the 405, the one and only professional sales trainer, Will Crist.
Well, welcome to Pilgrim Talks on this nice, chilly day in Southern California. I want to say, first of all, TCU is in the Rose Bowl. First time ever, and maybe, according to my friends on the East Coast, maybe the last time in our lifetime. But I just got to say that my alma mater, I've rescued my T-shirt from the back of the closet and wearing it proudly now. TCU, go Horned Frogs. Take them Badgers out. Well, you know what I've been finding out in walking up and down the 405 is that people are beginning to look around and find out that there's plenty of marketplaces to take their products, and there's plenty of market share to be had. Now, I've been asking folks all over the county about what they've been doing to increase their sales, what they've been doing to reduce their costs, what they're doing to retain their current clients, and what they're doing to develop their people, because you know, when you get down to the people who have been the best in your company, after letting go those who aren't the best, then all of a sudden every one of your employees become the target for your competition's recruitment efforts. So it's very important at this point to remember to develop your people. And as I talk to the guests that we've had today, that we're going to have on the show today, they have some great ideas for what they've been doing. They're both very successful companies, and I want to introduce you to a very good friend of mine who has been a client for many years, Ed Buckley of Select Data. Ed, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Will. Glad to be here.
So tell us a little bit about, tell the audience a little bit about what Select Data does.
Well, predominantly, we are a software vendor that specializes in applications for the home care and hospice industries, and they are clinical and nursing applications that allow the clinicians to document the care that they deliver to the patients in their homes, and then that documentation obviously populates the electronic medical record for the patient, as well as whatever billing system they may be using to generate their claims for reimbursement purposes.
Okay, so this is an electronic. You have a way of pulling all this together so that the various places that need to be billed can be billed, right?
Yes. It's a hosted application, so the client has no need for servers or anything of that nature. It's fully hosted. It integrates with any MIS billing system that's on the common market today within the healthcare space. It allows the clinicians some unique flexibility in that the electronic medical record can be populated using traditional desktop data entry. They can use laptops in the field. They can use the iPad. They can even use paper. We call it smart paper, and they can scan it, and then that paper, the data from the paper is extracted and then populates electronic medical record as well. That enables the caregiver who's a little uncomfortable with technology to be able to still capture the data necessary for populating the electronic health record.
I see. Let's talk a little bit about business. Mm-hmm. Over the last couple of years, what have you done to increase your sales?
Well, obviously, the first and foremost is to make sure that our products are innovative and that they're the type of products that the clients are interested in that can keep them efficient and that we can be competitive. We never want to sell anything the client doesn't need. Our goal is to solve pain problems, is to discover what the client's pain is, if they have any, and once we've determined that what the pain is, whether or not our solutions are the appropriate solution for solving that problem. So our method of growing our business is really more education and consultative in nature. We obviously do our traditional calls and get appointments made. And then from that point on, the sale becomes consultive.
And so you have salespeople?
We do have salespeople, yes.
How many salespeople do you
have? We put them through Sandler, which was very successful for us.
And how many salespeople do you have?
We have four right now, in addition to the executive team that often gets involved. We have four full-time salespeople, as well as some folks just making cold calls for them and feeding the leads up to the salespeople.
Now, is there a lot of traveling around for these salespeople?
There is for the larger accounts. You know, the larger accounts want to meet with you, spend some time with not just the sales individual, but some of the executives within the company as well. But traditionally, the average size client, most everything's done over the web now using WebEx or GoToMeeting or some tool of that nature, and works very, very well. We find that travel has been greatly reduced over the last 3 or 4 years, taking advantage of some of those tools.
So tell me how you use this consultative sale over the web.
Well, we the first and foremost is to get an appointment made to spend, you know, 30 minutes with a decision maker. We don't want to waste time with gatekeepers and folks of that nature. We want to talk to the decision maker, somebody that can answer the appropriate questions. So the hardest part of the sales cycle is really right there. It's just getting that initial appointment. Once that appointment's made and decision maker has given us 30 minutes of their time, we really just, the WebEx is really just for discussion purposes because we're not face-to-face, so that we bring up a PowerPoint. It's not a demo of any of our products. It's strictly a PowerPoint that allows the two parties to get to know each other a little better. So it's for discussion purposes. And the whole idea there is bonding and rapport. We're trying to get to know them a little bit, both as an individual as well as the company that they represent, and we want them to get to know us as a company as well as the sales associate, you know, that's having the conversation with them. After that takes place, and there seems to be some genuine interest in what we're doing, when we get a better understanding of what we can do and we get a little better understanding of who they are, is at that point we ask for basically a commitment of some kind to agree to a set of steps that we're going to follow. We're not just going to go straight to demos and things of that nature. It's at this point that we have a discussion about what it means to be consultative, and because we don't want to sell them anything they don't need or want. And so at this point, after the bonding and rapport, we sort of have what we would call an upfront contract, where we basically commit to moving the relationship to the next level, that of a professional nature, and set up a subsequent meeting where we ask them some key questions in order to determine if they have pain in those key areas, and if they do, discuss it a little further to determine whether or not our solutions are going to help them with the pain in those areas. And so that's really the direction we go in. Basically, following that methodology, if the solution solves the pain and if the budget or the ROI that we produce allows them to afford the technology to solve their pain problem, the solution sells itself even before you've even done a demo of the entire solution. Because demos can take a long time. They typically involve committees and all kinds of other individuals that need to have some say-so because these technologies are fairly elaborate. So what we want to determine early on is whether or not the pain that every business is in some kind of pain, but whatever pain that they're experiencing based on some key questions, whether or not our solutions can solve those problems and whether our solutions are affordable for them to solve those problems. If we get yeses on those two questions, then we move on to put the icing on the cake and actually start doing formal demonstrations of the product.
Now, do you have question that asks them about how much it's costing them right now to use their current system?
Yes, we do. We talk about what they're currently spending, but also the results that they're getting. What are the efficiencies that they're achieving? What's the productivity levels their nurses and caregivers are able to achieve? And we can compare those statistics very quickly with our database and our metrics to determine whether or not we can be of value to them or not.
Now, is there a compliance issue here? I mean, are some of these hospitals or healthcare agencies, are they vulnerable to an outside regulatory agency?
Oh, yes. It's a very heavily regulated industry. We have HIPAA issues, which is obviously all the confidentiality issues around the medical record. There's also all levels of documentation requirements that the caregivers must document for the care that they've provided in order to be reimbursed appropriately. So the technologies that are deployed in these organizations have to meet not only the confidentiality issues around the medical record, but also the compliance issues around the data that's being captured to make sure that the clinical care that's being delivered is appropriate for that patient. And so there's a whole series of questions that we go through as it relates to those two issues as well in that first consultative discussion. Yep.
All right. Now, does your solution help them with the compliance issues? Does it make them more compliant?
Yes. At both levels, the answer to that is yes. From a HIPAA perspective, because it's a hosted environment and it's a secure network, and we have all the different levels of security and disaster recovery and offsite storage and, I/O centers and all those sorts of things that are necessary to make sure these records are properly stored and secure. We obviously have that. The average client can't typically afford to do that for themselves. So on the HIPAA issue, that's an easy yes because it's a very expensive thing to do. Typically only the very, very large players can afford to do this for themselves. You would normally go to somebody to help you with this, such as Select Data, because it is so expensive to do that. On the second issue, as it relates to documentation compliance, the answer obviously is yes as well. All of our tools are qualified for the CCHIT certification for electronic medical records. We've met all of the criteria to do that, and so we meet all the regulatory requirements that would be necessary to be certified.
Does your software do any quality control on the information that the healthcare providers are inputting?
Yeah, actually, that's an excellent question. One of the advantages of using a hosted software application such as ours, and there are others like ours in the market, is that the data is in a very large repository. It's obviously secure by provider. But then certain metrics can be used to compare that data to other companies using the same applications. So we can basically benchmark the data against the group, send the benchmark data back to the specific provider, and they can compare themselves to the group to determine the quality of the data that they are capturing. It's an excellent way of measuring the proficiency of your field staff as to their clinical proficiency. It's an excellent way to track errors, where you can do some continuing education for your field staff, et cetera, et cetera. So the quality of the care is usually greatly enhanced when you use an application that's in a hosted environment because of this benchmarking characteristic that goes far beyond your typical statistical benchmarking that you can get from a benchmarking company, because we are looking at the entire data set, not just a few key indicators. And because everybody's using the same tool, the same electronic medical record, and all of these elements can be compared to each other throughout the entire record, basically every element captured within that record now is benchmarkable, and you can then compare outcomes to the quality of the data captured by clinician, by patient, and determine whether or not there's opportunity for improvement, or whether you're meeting the standards. And we often see very, very significant improvements in outcomes when clients come onto the system for no other reason than they really were operating in the dark before, and now they have something to truly compare themselves to.
You really bring lots of value to your clients.
Well, we certainly think so.
Do they?
Yes, I think they do. The clients that are good operators, that care about their patients, want to be in this business for the long haul, want to have quality patient care and good reputations, they love what we offer them. The fact that we can scrub this data at this level is extremely valuable to them. And the fact that they can then use us for some additional services like coding review services and billing and so forth, that enables us to even go deeper into their organization and provide some assistance and oversight over their operations if they choose to use those services above and beyond the use of the applications.
All right, so let's ask a little bit about over the past couple of years. What have you done to reduce your costs?
Well, we have flattened the organization a little bit. We're not as hierarchical as we used to be. We had a key position in our particular organization, which was a chief operating officer position, created a little bit of a bottleneck in the way we operated, and we pulled that position out. Didn't eliminate the individual, just changed the structure, flattened it out, and created an org chart that basically allowed a common voice. And we basically have a weekly president's meeting where everybody that reports basically to the CEO or one of his direct reports attends that meeting. So we have complete open communication and transparency throughout the organization. That's allowed us to operate much more leanly than we were in the past, and information flows much more quickly. We can make changes to applications and to reports and to, you know, databases much more efficiently. So we've eliminated quite a bit of the hierarchy within the organization. Originally, it was to save money, but we found out that the company responded very positively to the change, and we run much more efficiently than we ever have in the past.
All right. So to increase sales, you've implemented the Sandler system,
we
right?
We did. Mm-hmm.
And you've probably refined that over and over, making it a deeper part of your organization.
Yes.
And then to reduce costs, you've taken a look at your org chart and simplified that, flattened it, and increased the intensity of the communication or the number of times that you communicate.
Right. Try to eliminate a few of the steps in getting information, you know, from one part of the company to another part of the company to make the changes occur more efficiently. And on the sales note, seeing as you brought up Sandler and implementation of that, one of the advantages of using a system like Sandler's is this idea that, you know, you really only should be selling to clients that need or want what you have to sell. And that creates a very positive long-term relationship with the client if you're only selling what they need or what they desire. So one of the things we learned to do early on as part of our implementation of Sandler was in that initial bonding and rapport, making sure that we make that point very, very clear. And it's a promise that we make. If you give us 30 minutes of your time so we can have a meaningful discussion, we promise not to sell you something you don't need or not to sell you something you cannot afford. And we stick to that promise. If there is no need and there is no budget for this, we're just going to move on and not waste your time. I think a lot of salespeople spend an inordinate amount of time chasing prospects that really aren't legitimate prospects for the company. The solution is really probably not what that particular prospect needs. And they need to just move on and move on to a client that potentially has a real need. There's this idea in the marketplace today that every prospect is a potential client, and I disagree completely. And I think Sandler taught us that as well. A prospect is nothing more than a phone number until you have the opportunity to meet that person, establish a meaningful personal relationship, and then determine whether or not there's any real need. And going about it that way is far more professional. It significantly reduces the amount of time you waste chasing dead leads. You just simply move on and you have the discipline to move on. But often sales folks rather call the same phone number over and over again than simply move on and make another call, another cold call, as it were, as tough as that is, and then try to establish that appointment and then establish that relationship. So that has saved us some time and money as well.
Well, good. So you're willing to take a no. You're willing to disqualify people.
Exactly.
And you promised to do that to them.
And we promised to do that. And we insist that the sales guys do it, even if they don't want to, even if they're not willing to follow that principle. We want our company represented with that sort of dignity that we're going to follow that principle. So we force the sales guys to do it because it's good for our reputation. It's actually good for sales as well, but sometimes it's harder to convince them of that. But it's so our reason for enforcing it is that we want our reputation, to be treated with a certain amount of respect, and we offer that respect to our clients. So we enforce the discipline.
And it's worked out for you.
It has. It has.
Good.
Yep.
Well, talk a little bit about what you do to retain your current clients.
Well, I would say that then, first and foremost, is to remain committed to being as innovative as possible within our space. To be industry experts, to know what we're talking about, and to provide technologies and solutions that make their lives easier. So it's a significant investment in R&D. That is absolutely our number one commitment to our clients. It's what keeps our clients committed to us. They're always getting the latest and greatest set of tools to use, reporting methodologies, outcome methodologies, benchmarking tools, et cetera, to manage their business. And it's worked very well for us. As long as we continue to be innovative, our clients continue to be very, very supportive. If you sit on your laurels for too long, the competition is just going to pass you up. So for us, innovation is definitely number one.
Does customer service have a role to play in this?
Yes, a big role. We have a dedicated client services department that that goes way beyond your help desk kind of ideas. If a client has issues with an application or access to reports or even access to the system, they can call, obviously, our support line or our help desk line. It's 24/7. However, above and beyond that, we have an entire client services department that does WebEx training and is constantly available to the client. So if a client that's using our technology happens to hire some new staff and doesn't have the time to sit down and train those new employees on these applications, they simply hand them over to us. We spool up a WebEx and we train them and we record it for them and they're off and running. And so we're always available to them. And then if the employee just needs to call us and get refreshed on a particular area of the application and how to use this or that, we're always available for them to do that. And we don't charge for any of those additional training services. It's just part of what we do. So we want to be available to them to continue to help their employees do a better job using the applications and the tools. And sometimes these conversations, become fairly large. It'll go beyond just the applications, but actually the practice of healthcare in certain areas. And we have a dedicated full-time chief compliance officer and a compliance team so that if the agencies that we support have more technical questions, it can go above client services even and go to our compliance department where they can actually help them with the regulatory requirements and explaining what the regs are and what's the appropriate practice for a particular patient.
Okay. I heard very early in the series of CEO conversations from Jim Skrzynski an interesting idea. His customer service people, he calls them customer success teams.
Mm-hmm.
And
good.
They are dedicated. In fact, he has some way of compensating them for the success of his customers.
Mm.
It was an interesting idea. Maybe sometime we can have lunch with Jim and let you talk to him, because you both are dedicated, more than most, passionate about customer success. And his idea was just so groundbreaking to me that I pass that along. Maybe we get together sometime for lunch with Jim.
Yeah, I'd like to hear what he's doing there, because we definitely are committed to the success of our customers, and we want them to grow, we want them to succeed, we want them to be profitable. If they're not successful, we're not going to keep them as clients, and we're not going to be successful.
Right. Tell me a little bit about did you downsize your team? You certainly flattened out your organization. Did you eliminate some positions?
Yeah, we did. With some of the market changes, we did downsize our team a little bit. We took advantage. We decided not to increase our rates and to hold steady, and even to get more aggressive on pricing, because everybody's struggling in the current environment. And that required us to, cut wherever we could in order to be as competitive as possible. It very much tied in with the flattening of the organization. We did it at the same time. At first, we were very nervous, can we live without, these different individuals and so forth. And surprisingly enough, the company is running much, much smoother without some of that extra overhead. So it's been very, very successful. In fact, we've been in business over 20 years, and I don't think we've ever run more efficiently than we do today. And we've been able to pass that efficiency on to our clients in keeping our pricing steady, and even in some cases reducing it for certain applications.
What have you done to develop your people in the midst of this?
Well, I think the biggest thing for us is that we've really empowered them. When we flattened out the organization, we changed the reporting structure in such a way that we made the organization very transparent, all the way through to the client even. We have a series of documentation tools that every time we have a phone call with a client, we have regular monthly calls and weekly calls in addition to the normal help desk and client services calls where they call us. We actually call them on a regular basis, just to double check how are things going, and go over their numbers and their statistics and their data, and let them know how they're doing. So if they're not paying attention to the benchmark data, we'll point out to them where they're tracking relative to that benchmark data. So we've taken this transparency all the way through from the client into right to with inside our organization, and flattened it out. And what that's done for our people is really empowered them. So an individual within the organization that's having this conversation on a regular basis with a client and helping them get through some of these hurdles and documenting all of this, and it's now then recorded and posted out there as part of the permanent record of the relationship, it really makes that individual feel very much connected to the success of the client as well as the success of our organization. So I think empowering our people has been, and we did it out of necessity because we did flatten the organization out, but what we found out is that it's an incredible retention tool, because these people really value their jobs now because they feel valued, and they are valued.
Well, now, I would assume that you have some ambitious goals for where you want the company to be a year from now.
I do.
Is that right? What's standing in the way? Why aren't you there right now? What would have to change for you to be there right now?
Well, without getting overly technical, there was a particular piece of our application that we had to finish in order to make us significantly more competitive than any of our competitors. And that is now in the final beta test phase. We've released it to a few clients. We're just testing it as we're in these last few months of the year. And it's scheduled to be fully released February 1st. Once that's released February 1st, we do believe we'll have the competitive advantage to go out to the market and have something available that nobody else really has available, and will give us the ability to generate more sales activity. Our sales have been tracking fairly steadily despite that, but we really felt that this was an important enhancement to what we're doing, and we have spent a tremendous amount of money and quite some time to get it developed, and we're about ready to release it and very excited about it. And at that point, we will be beefing up our sales department a little bit because we're going to want to get the message out aggressively and fast. We want to get some first mover advantage because somebody will definitely follow in our footsteps. It's just a matter of time. So.
Is there a mic in a minute? To talk to business owners,
Will? Hello?
Yeah,
you're breaking up just a little bit. I'm not sure why.
All right, if you had a mic and a minute and you could speak to Orange County business owners, what would you say to them?
What would I say to them? I would say that transparency is always a good thing. It breeds integrity and ethics into an organization. It empowers individuals, and it gives clients a sense of comfort that they're getting what they pay for. Everybody's on the same page, and it creates a partnership within the organization and with your client partners as well. I'm a big believer in transparency, and it does allow you to operate much more efficiently.
Wonderful. That's wonderful advice. If someone wanted to get in touch with you, Ed, how would they get in touch with you?
I'm available at edbuckley@selectdata.com.
All right.
And feel free to contact me anytime they'd like.
Wonderful. It's wonderful to continue this relationship. I'm glad to have seen you in Laguna a couple of weeks ago.
It was good to bump into you.
Yeah. Take care.
Okay,
we'll talk to you soon.
All the best. Thank you.
And now before we go on to our second guest, a word from our sponsor.
Large companies with complex sales channels have sophisticated lead management needs. They require customized lead management systems and services and integration with additional systems. That's why, since 1981, these companies have relied on SmartLead by AdTrack, the only full-service lead management company with customized systems for lead management, Salesforce automation, and analytics. These systems are managed by each client's dedicated account manager and are integrated with SmartLead's in-house marketing services that include a contact center, email marketing services, print services, direct mail and fulfillment, and an ISO-certified warehouse. SmartLead by AdTrack. 3 decades of pioneering lead management best practices and systems for complex lead management needs. For more information, visit our website at smartlead.com.
Well, welcome back. As we begin to move into this very quiet uptick in business activity, I've been paying attention to those companies that were startups, that were just getting going, and watching them slowly get that momentum moving forward. From time to time, I have reflected on companies that I saw a year ago, 2 years ago, and as I come across them today, I am amazed, fascinated, and encouraged by the growth that they have. Now, one of those is a homegrown, becomes a CRM, becomes a client retention tool, it becomes a vault for data, and it's called Client Look. And I want to invite the president, the CEO of Client Look, to be with us. Michael, are you there? Welcome.
I'm here, Will. Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Well, you know, we started talking a couple of years ago, didn't we?
That's right. That's right. It was, gosh, probably early 2009, I suppose.
Well, tell us a little bit about what's happened between 2009 and now. Tell us a little bit about what Client Look is.
Well, we were a startup software company based here in Orange County, and in January of 2009, after about a year's worth of software development, we released an online project collaboration system called Client Look. And it had some unique application. We had designed it to fit a vertical that I had spent a lot of time in, commercial real estate, but it had general market appeal as well. But since then, and despite a challenging business environment, especially in the commercial real estate arena, we've managed to prosper, and I think we've done so primarily because of our flexibility and our innovation, in the sense that we, you know, as many startups do, they come out with one burning, passionate mission in mind, and fortunately, we were adept enough to be able to change and to provide the market with the tools that we learned that they wanted. And so now, 2 years later, we're actually a much different company offering-wise than we were when we started and when we last spoke.
So tell me about the difference now. It's used by people other than or in addition to commercial real estate brokers?
Yeah, we started to branch out into other industries, and interestingly enough, what we discovered was that there were segments of our core offering, and this may be something that many software companies find, but there were elements of our core offering that companies out there identified with and came to us to create an opportunity solely based around that. As an example, as a part of our suite of services, we had a place in which you could store documents, this vault sort of element. And it was a meaningful part of the entire solution. But we had a large association came to us and said, you know, look, we've got 15,000 members, and we don't have a way to share our document repository with them, and we like just this little segment of your product, and could you extrapolate that and make it into a service that we could embed into our website to service our membership online, you know, in the cloud. So we did that for them, and it spawned a new product line for us that we've been able to replicate with many other accounts.
Well, there you paying close attention to what customers want. Being very customer-centric has been a central core of the conversation we've had about increasing sales. So tell me a little bit about how you, in the midst of this recession that had such an impact on commercial real estate, how did you keep your sales going? What have you done to increase sales?
Well, we set upon a kind of a top-down sales and marketing approach, one in which instead of pursuing, you know, a sales opportunity from sales opportunity or chasing company to company, we sought out those organizations, those associations that aggregated the types of clientele that we were after, and then we reached marketing agreements with those entities many times at no cost to us. To market to their constituency primarily through email. So what it offered us was an email distribution list, marketing-wise, of hundreds of thousands of people very rapidly, something that we would never have been able to compile on our own. And it gave us a legitimacy by being marketed through these entities to their membership that, you know, it would have taken us years to build as a startup company. So we found great success in partnering with, a half a dozen or so different associations, business associations, that wanted to deliver tools to their members, not as a purchase, but simply as a marketing message. And it's been very successful for us.
So who paid for the software?
The software was paid for by the end user. So these associations would would help us drive our messaging to their membership. And then the way in which we discovered for us was one of the best ways to then create a sales presentation for large groups was to do a webinar. So there's a variety of different web conferencing services out there. So we use one that allows us to entertain an audience of up to 1,000 people. So we would send out, or these associations would send out marketing invitations to these webinars with a very specific message, and we would get hundreds, sometimes thousands of sign-ups. And so we could do in a single, 1 hour webinar what would have otherwise taken us months of individual sales effort to accomplish, and obviously a dramatically lower cost.
Would you be willing to share with us what service you were using?
Sure. We kind of bounced around with a number of them, but we finally settled on GoToWebinar.
Uh-huh. Lots of people have. I think out of the last 10 online meetings that I've had with groups of people, GoToMeeting, GoToWebinar have been the predominant player.
Yeah. Yeah, GoToMeeting was the one that we used prior to kind of scaling to a larger audience. But we found that it works really well. You can record presentations and put them on your website, so it's very effective.
Let me see if I understand. You used the association to generate interest that drove people to sign up to come and see the webinar. Is that
correct?
Right?
That's right.
Following that, what happened? Were they directed to go pay online, and that was the sale? Did they raise their hand looking for a phone call? Did you then cold call everybody who was? What was the process after that?
Well, typically, we presented at the end of the webinar some offer, as so many of these webinars do, an offer that was of a limited time. Sign up for our subscription online service in this window of opportunity and receive some benefit, some discount. So that was our primary vehicle. So we had a flood of incoming calls typically for days after the webinar had concluded. But the GoToWebinar attendee report that we would get would actually tell us which people paid the most attention to the webinar. And that would then become our short list for follow-up.
Paid attention to the webinar? How did they know that?
Yeah, the way that they do it, as far as I understand it, is they track simply whether the webinar window that I'm projecting, from here in my office desktop, whether the webinar window that you're seeing at your end is active. And as soon as you minimize it and pull up your email or another web browser or another program, it marks you as sort of inattentive. So it then measures both the time in which you were involved in the webinar, when did you log in and when did you leave, and how attentive you were during the course of the webinar, and it gives you a rating. And you can then rate the webinar attendees by their presumed interest level and take your further effort from there.
Amazing. Amazing what we can do. Now, you then had a hot list of people who paid attention at the webinar. Is that that the list that you used to call?
That's right. That's right. But the benefit of this sort of relationship with an organization like that is, nobody turns over 1,000 leads of their constituency to you. But when they sign up for your webinar, effectively you capture all those leads into something that you can then use. So even those people that didn't pay attention, even those people that didn't attend, would become future leads for us in terms of prospecting and follow-up. Because one way or another, from 80,000 people, this 1,000 core members identified themselves as being interested in our service.
Well, when your people call, how many people do you have there to call who are callers?
Oh, outbound callers, we could have typically a half a dozen or so.
All right. What's the process what is their sales process? They pick up the phone, somebody calls, somebody answers. What happens on that phone call?
Well, they identify themselves as calling from client look, whether it's a follow-up to the webinar. The message to the interested people is, sort of a presumptive we're calling to see, if you'd like to get involved with our service and et cetera, et cetera. Are you aware of the limited time discount? And then we'll even call those people that didn't attend frequently, which were very likely candidates, but for one reason or another had a conflict, and were grateful for the follow-up. So we quickly learned not to assume that because somebody didn't attend that they weren't interested in our service. So the message there was, we understand that you didn't make the webinar, and we'd like to, provide an opportunity to tell you more about our service, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. All right. So now, I'm curious, and you have to tell me if you don't want to, but what percentage of those phone calls actually bought? And maybe it's what percentage of people that
really
you talk
varies.
To.
Yeah, it varies. It varies, and I haven't quite figured out the formula for why this might be, but it could be as high as 20% in some cases. It depends on the audience and the time of year. Summertime are worse than the end of the year period for us, and those sorts of things. But in some cases we have a 1 out of 2 hit ratio. It really depends.
Be very interesting to dig into that more. 20%, is that getting you all the money that you want right now?
Well, typically, yeah. Based on our cost structure, we're highly efficient here. So, yeah, that's usually quite a windfall for us.
All right, so 5 or 10% more wouldn't make it a big difference to you.
Oh, it definitely would. Absolutely.
Well. I'd be curious sometime just to explore that to see what if anything, could be done to increase that. So talk to us a little bit about cost. Now, I think in talking to John, there was some talk about costs. I have some notes here about outsourcing. Was that a way that you – maybe that's a way that you even began very leanly?
Yes. We, as far as startups go, I suspect we're about as bootstrapped as a company could get, in the sense that we leveraged technology, external resources, friends and family, and everybody as much as possible to get to our goal here. But yeah, we outsourced everything from our software development, accounting, legal, marketing, graphic design. These days, the resources that are out there to both discover and find incredibly talented people and to hire them on a temporary basis very cost effectively is wonderful. And the story of the world is flat is really true. I mean, we've used people from all over the world to fill a variety of different roles, from data mining and research to software development and marketing. We can do it all online. And the way that we designed the company was essentially to allow anyone that participated in our firm to work anywhere they wanted to be. So we didn't want to be tied to a set location, a set geography, but have the freedom and the flexibility and really to espouse the benefits that we're trying to sell to our end user. This cloud-based concept in leveraging technology, really take advantage of those tools and build a business around it.
What talk to me a little bit about what you do to retain your current customers.
Well, we spend a lot of time with people, both as a means of retention and as a means of lead development and prospecting. It's a common belief that it's far either easier to upsell an existing company than to find new customers, which is certainly the case with us. So we have opportunity to spend time with our customers through training and through frequent marketing and instructional videos, and we're constantly delivering our message and reinforcing their decision to buy our service. I mean, we are a subscription service, and the primary core of our subscription base pays us on a monthly basis. So every month we're earning our keep. And so what we do is try to constantly reinforce the benefits of our service, and not only provide information and insight into how they can use what we provide, but we go a long way towards helping educate them on other technology and tools in the marketplace that round out our solution and provide a synergistic sort of environment and capability for them.
Would that mean other affiliated cloud solutions?
Yeah. We do, as an example, a technology newsletter every month. Last month, we focused on an iPad review. So we espouse the features of the iPad and how it allows you to embrace this mobile cloud-based work environment, and then we outline a variety of different tools and software applications that run on the iPad that are of benefit to people who are mobile sales professionals. Before that, we focused on Google Voice, and before that, it was a variety of different just cloud-based initiatives and how to move your business from a desktop server-based operation to one in which you were completely free and mobile in every respect.
Is that limited to your subscription base, or is that a means of marketing? In other words, could somebody else, if they were interested, get on the list of people receiving that newsletter?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. And if my research on our web traffic is any indication, the spike that we get from these articles does not come from our user base or our email distribution list. It comes from random people anywhere finding our articles and gaining the benefit from them.
Well, I'm looking at the Client Look website right now, the home page, mm-hmm. and I'm eager to put my name in, but I don't see a place to do it. Can you do that for me?
Sure. Or you can go to our support page. There's a way to send us a message.
Support page.
Yep.
All right.
There.
I will send you a message saying, please put me on the list.
Sure.
Excellent. So now we've talked about sales that you're doing, and we're going to, I'm interested in seeing if there's a way, just curious to see if there's a way to increase your sales. Your costs have all been outsourced. So you've been very lean and conscious about that. And I'm also interested in hearing that you're sharing that efficiency, those new ideas, new solutions with your customer base.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's no reason why they couldn't gain the same level of efficiency that we do. They all have a need for Salesforce. They all have a need for accounting and the same sort of infrastructure, technology-wise and hardware-wise that we do. They all need email. There are great solutions out there, and our technology articles reference those. So we try to be a partner in their success over and above what we're providing them in our project collaboration and soon to be CRM system.
Well, good. That's wonderful. Now, with a broadly spread non-local remote sale organization, how do you develop them? How do you keep them on board?
The sales organization.
Well, I was just thinking sales would be good. I was thinking about your whole organization. How do you keep people focused on your projects rather than them writing you and saying, I have to terminate this because I've got somebody else who's more important?
Well, it's difficult. It's all a matter of keeping people interested and challenged and enthusiastic about what they do, whether it's one of our clients and our subscribers, or it's one of our team. So to me, it all boils down to communication. The more quality and frequent and consistent the communication, the better. Invariably, if we find we get a cancellation, It's frequently because, gosh, this guy one way or another fell through the cracks, and we haven't contacted him for, you know, so many months. And it's the same thing with a salesperson. You know, those people that don't get the investment of time and training and effort and consistent, you know, promotion of skills, you know, fall by the wayside as well.
Okay. Do you have programs of to develop people, regular programs?
We do. We have a system of training that we take our new salespeople through, primarily to certify them in the sale and support of our solution. But yeah, it's a multi-week process that requires, you know, study and training, and then it culminates with their presentation to us, at which point they sort of get a pass and fail, and if it's not good enough, they go back to the drawing board and build up another a presentation and then make the pitch all over again.
Wow, that's impressive. That's very impressive. And in a startup, too, that's very impressive. You're to be congratulated on that, Michael. That's great.
Thank you.
Well,
thank you.
I suppose that you've got some ideas where you want to be a year from now.
Yes, of course, yeah.
So, well, what's standing in the way? What's keeping you from being there tomorrow?
Well, in our case, it's simply a matter of primarily software development resources. We're on the verge of launching a whole new platform and taking our product line into a new horizontal sales focus. So we're hamstrung primarily simply by getting it done. So the certainly sales are always a part of that in terms of, you know, the broader sales focus we could get, and the more penetration, the better. But as a startup, I mean, I think this is probably a common issue, which is just having the resources to kind of finish all the grand ideas that you have in the pipeline.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, it sounds like you're well on the way. I really enjoy watching the development of Client Look from the time we first got started talking, and I can't remember exactly. I remember when we talked. I remember where I was when we talked. And I there was something about the first conversation. It was the wrong number or calling some. I don't remember exactly why, but I'm glad that whatever happened, because it's been a nice trip to visit with you along the way and see your progress.
Well, I'm glad to have you along for the ride.
Now, if you had a mic and a minute, and you could talk to people, business owners in Orange County, what would you tell them?
Well, I would invite them to visit our website, clientlook.com, to see what we're all about. I think that we're on to something pretty special, and with our new service, which is a contact tracking system, a CRM, a tool that's used by sales companies to manage their contacts, their prospects, their clients, and their calendar, is combined with our online project collaboration system. So we not only offer an internal sales tool, but a means of engaging externally with the client on a project-by-project basis to fulfill some assignment or sales objective. So, you know, my hope is that, you know, we could be in the running with whatever else somebody might be considering sales tool-wise, because I think it's a tool that could really be a focus and an integral mission-critical application in a sales organization.
Well, that's wonderful. So how would people get in touch with you again?
Well, it's the best bet is our website, which is clientlook.com. Which is simply clientlook, clientlook.com, or our toll-free sales number is 888-552-5665.
Again?
That's 888-552-5665.
Well, that's wonderful. I appreciate very much taking time out of your busy day, getting all of your software ready for the next step in the development of Client Look. It's been fun. I continue to watch you, and I look forward to talking with you a little bit in the coming weeks.
I appreciate it, Will. Thank you very much for having me on.
Wonderful. So there you have it. Two wonderful companies reinventing themselves over and again with technology. We are seeing that technology plays a huge role in not only making sales, but also in empowering the solutions that these companies bring to their customers, their prospects. Technology, as they begin to develop and release their new versions, will help increase the sales that are coming to Orange County. It's exciting to watch. I'm glad that you were with us today. I look forward to talking with you next week. This is the Pilgrim on the 405, wishing you a great week. Get out there and find those places where you're going to be able to shorten the time between where you are and where you want to be. Get those obstacles out of the way. Have a great week.
You've been listening to the one and only Will Chris, the original, the only Pilgrim on the 405. Only on octalkradio.net.